Our first case of the day is 003990, and it is G. Daniel Walker versus Thomas F. Page. Ms. Joliet, good morning.
May it please the court. My name is Amy Joliet. I'm here representing G. Daniel Walker, a prisoner in the California prison system who filed a complaint in the Southern District of Illinois to protect what this court has called his most fundamental right, his right of access to the court. Mr. Walker appeals to this court a decision by the district court to dismiss his Section 1983 action on the basis of failure to exhaust administrative remedies. The district court's order should be reversed for two independent reasons. First, the court erred because Mr. Walker had exhausted all available administrative remedies in Illinois. Second, the court erred by converting defendant's motion to dismiss to a motion for summary judgment by considering evidence outside of the pleadings and not providing notice to Mr. Walker or a fair opportunity for Mr. Walker to respond. From 1992 to December 1997, Mr. Walker was a prisoner at Menard Correctional Center in Menard, Illinois. When notified of his impending transfer to California, Mr. Walker packed up his materials, and that included 99 boxes of legal materials that Mr. Walker had collected. And he prepared those materials for shipping to California. He inventoried the boxes, and he provided an amount of money to the prison officials to ship those boxes to California.
Just curiosity, think, do you have any idea how much it costs on this?
I do not have any idea how much it costs, sir.
Well, you said he provided money to pay for it, but we just made a little call to UPS, and apparently this would cost about $2,500 to ship.
Yes, Your Honor, and I think that...
Over a ton of...
Your Honor, I think that may very well be true, and I think there's some disconnect as to what the defendants may have told the plaintiff, or we don't really know what the conversations were with respect to what the shipping cost would be and whether his amount of money would be enough or not.
What authority obliges the state of Illinois to send his property? In other words, the right to access to federal court precludes officials from hindering prisoners' efforts to pursue her legal claims. But what cases say that the right guarantees the legal assistance that would be available in the absence of confinement?
Your Honor, I'm not aware of a specific case that would provide that the prisoner has an absolute right to have his material shipped with him. I think there's quite a bit of authority, as Your Honor has alluded, that the prisoner has a right to access to the court, and this prisoner has alleged that there were certain cases that he was involved in that his materials were contained in these boxes.
Do we know how much of the material is non-legal?
I do not, Your Honor.
I mean, that's one of the problems. It just seems so unreasonable to ask that 2,800 pounds of material be sent. It seems inconceivable that most of that could be legal material.
And
I can put the legal material in a box or two. Three or four.
I believe, Your Honor, that Mr. Walker did inventory his boxes, so there may be information about how much, what specifically are in those boxes, and it may be a situation where some of it could be segregated and some of it could not. The concern of Mr. Walker is that now his complaint has been dismissed. He is in a position where he does not have, through this court, the ability to seek the return of those boxes or any portion of those boxes.
Well, what do you do with California's apparent position that they don't want to receive this material.
That is a problem, Your Honor. And
that's a pretty big problem.
A pretty big problem.
You're doing a great job. We thank you for taking the appointment here in this case and vigorously arguing your client's position, but it's just, I don't want to give you a hard time by these questions, but it just seems so unreasonable and impractical.
There is certainly a problem with the fact that California has stated that the prisoners may only have a certain amount of property in their location, but it may be appropriate to make other arrangements in California, and Mr. Walker may be able to do that. I don't know about that, sir, but that certainly doesn't take away from his right to have his legal materials, and the concern that he has that the defendants were not acting based solely on the California property requirements. He has alleged that the defendants had dark plans for him, that the defendants made kind of conspired in a way that was not necessarily based only on the fact that California could not receive the property. So. There are two specific parts of the complaint that are central to Mr. Walker's argument here. First, he's alleged that he's exhausted his administrative remedies in California before filing this lawsuit. And second, he's alleged that it was only after he was taken to California that he was notified that he would not be able to receive his property in California.
How does he avoid the preclusive effect of the Illinois judgment?
Your Honor, that is a troubling issue, considering that it was raised for the first time on appeal. We are concerned that the defendant, Mr. Walker, did not have an adequate opportunity to fully respond and develop a record relating to that judgment. It's not clear from the facts before us and the record that has been submitted for judicial notice by this court that all the facts were developed. He had a full and fair opportunity to litigate those claims. Certainly didn't bring a Section 1983 action in the state court. So there are some questions that about the possibility, and it's an affirmative defense that we're not sure that the defendants have fully raised and proven the applicability of that decision.
Want to save the rest of your time for rebuttal?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court. I'm here on behalf of the defendants, Warden Page, and the other Department of Corrections employees. As Judge Rover indicated, this case has a very serious impediment to going forward, and that is res judicata. Here, the plaintiff, and it's uncontroverted, the Illinois Appellate Court has already determined in a mandamus case based on the very same facts that Mr. Walker is not entitled to have his property sent gratis to California, and also the Illinois Appellate Court explicitly held that Mr. Walker did know 6 weeks before he was to be transferred to California that California would not accept his property, and he had three choices according to the Illinois Appellate Court and Illinois law. He had to either ship it to somebody else or have it destroyed or donated. Those are the choices when you're being transferred. And Mr. Walker effectively waived his right to have his property shipped to California, even if he had such a right. The problem here with res judicata, although counsel said that perhaps Mr. Walker didn't have an opportunity to raise the 1983 claim, well, that's simply not so. He could have joined it with his mandamus claim. And in any event, it doesn't really matter because res judicata precludes any claim that was or could have been brought in the first action. So here, Mr. Walker is just out of court. And I might mention,
too... Did you raise res judicata on the trial level? Yes.
No, we did not. And I might mention that Mr. Walker did not mention in his complaint, even though the form explicitly...
Well, of course, he wasn't going to... He'd have to... He would have pled himself out of court if he had done that. I'm just curious to know why you didn't raise the issue.
Your Honor, I don't think we were aware of it at the time, because I think when he filed, as I recall, when he filed his complaint in this court, the appeal was pending, so we weren't, so there was no final decision yet, so actually we couldn't have raised res judicata there.
But you could have raised it if it had been, you won on the trial level, didn't you?
Well, yes, but you need a final decision, and so if it's pending on appeal, then it's not final for res judicata purposes.
For purposes, you couldn't raise the issue?
No, I don't think so, Your Honor.
I don't know why not. I mean, you raise the issue and let the court be aware of the fact that it was pending a case appeal on exactly the same issue, strikes me as being an intelligent way to handle it.
Well, that's true, Your Honor. We could have informed the court that the case was pending.
In which case, you would have waited to find out what happened and then to
right.
back the case.
That's true, Your Honor. We could have done that. And we didn't.
So the answer is you didn't know about it.
I would guess. I mean, I'm not really certain if the trial... I assume the trial counsel didn't know...
If you didn't raise the issue at all, would we still have jurisdiction over it?
Yes, Your Honor. It's not a matter of jurisdiction, and according to the supplemental authority...
So that you can waive the res judicata, the state can.
Yes, it can be waived. If you and for example, in the cases that the plaintiff cited in the brief, all those cases came down the party raised res judicata after either summary judgment was entered
right.
or after trial.
Right.
And certainly at that sort of procedural posture, the defendant would have raised the affirmative defense, but we haven't even answered yet. And so the opportunity to raise an affirmative defense actually hasn't arisen yet.
Mm.
So
well,
that would be another reason.
You don't want an opportunity either, do you?
No, Your Honor, I don't.
Would it be clear? Would it be plain? From the complaint and other papers on file that res judicata rendered the case frivolous? Because if so, you know, a court can raise res judicata on its own initiative. That's, you know, Arizona versus California.
Right. I think of frivolous as being absolutely out of the ballpark, and so it would be... And I have, I think, a broader notion than most people do. But I think that certainly, because res judicata could be waived as a defense, perhaps even if you know that there's a res judicata defense out there, perhaps it's not frivolous to, you know, in that regard. But I think once you know that a res judicata defense exists, then, you know, as we mentioned in the supplemental authority, Buckley versus Fitzgibbon, I think the court is bound to address it. And here, I really don't think that there can be any question that res judicata applies. And not only res judicata, but to the very fact of exhaustion. Plaintiff is saying that their complaint allows the reasonable inference that he did not know of the refusal to ship before he left, but in fact that very issue was decided in the Illinois mandamus action. I might just briefly, even if res judicata were not entirely preclusive here, there's also a problem, I believe, with the notion of access to the courts, that the complaint is not under the new Christopher versus Harbury, or not new necessarily, but the clarification of Christopher versus Harbury, that because an access to the court claim, such as plaintiff's a default claim, is predicated on the vitality of the underlying claim, then that in which the plaintiff would have defaulted, he needed to express that along Rule 8 lines with enough specificity. And here all he said is he defaulted, so it's impossible to know whether there is any injury. And in that regard, I would say the complaint is frivolous because there just isn't enough there. On the other hand, as we said in the brief, I think that this would not preclude him from going back with leave to amend. If there are no further questions, we ask that the court affirm the dismissal with prejudice on res judicata grounds. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Welsh. Ms. Joliet, 2.5 minutes.
With respect to the defendant's arguments about race judicata, I don't believe that they have shown necessarily that they have listed through all of the elements of race judicata, and that in the started to say earlier, that in the narrow exception that they're trying to fit within, where the court can raise it even though they had not raised it in the district court, I think they need to show that all the facts are there and that they're all uncontroverted. And there's certainly a good amount of disagreement with respect to whether he had the obligation to exhaust his administrative remedies in Illinois. It's not clear from the procedural posture of the Illinois decision that he had the opportunity to dispute that, or whether the, as the district court did in this case, they just, that district court just relied, or that state court just relied on the defendant's assertion without evidentiary support that he received this memo, which he says he did not receive. With respect to qualified immunity and Christopher versus Harper, I believe that was not a pro se case, and that makes it a different circumstance. The defendants are requiring certain heightened pleading standards, which I believe under the Seventh Circuit authority, there's a less stringent pleading standard for pro se prisoners, and I believe the case that he has filed fairly does state a claim for denial of access to the court. There are no further questions. That's all I have today.
Ms. Joliet, thank you so much for the fine job that you have done on behalf of Mr. Walker.
Thank you, Judge.
The court truly appreciates it. And, of course, Ms. Welsh, thank you for the fine job you always do. And we're going to take a few moments. The case, of course, will be taken under advisement.